Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Andy. I needed to let you know that we are coming down to the wire on RebateJet.com. What's RebateJet? It's a platform I created for you guys, the small to medium-sized sellers trying to compete against those big brands with those big budgets. Go now to RebateJet.com, sign up for that free seller account before it goes away this month. Now, why do you want to be a part of RebateJet? Just a few things. You can list promo codes for free. You can offer 3 rebates free per day. You can list your products and sell them directly to our customers on our website. We even have a free liquidation marketplace for you to unload products that didn't work out. We also have something else crazy in the works. You guys are going to love it. Go now, RebateJet.com. Now onto the show.
Welcome to the Seller Roundtable e-commerce coaching and business strategies with Andy Arnott and Amy Wiese.
Absolutely. So we alluded to it in our title, but when we're talking with Brandon, I wanted to pick his brain in terms of the coronavirus. It's on everybody's mind, and people have widely differing opinions on that. I was just curious because Brandon, when I see something like this come out, like I'm always searching for data, right? Like you can listen to the news all day long, but to me, if you look at the data, that's going to tell the story, right? So are you like looking at data? How are you taking taking that the risk into account? And after that, with the inevitable decline of the economy, which has already kind of started to happen, what are you hedging your bets on in terms of investments or, with your Amazon business, things like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I've had to revise like our growth. We originally going into the year, we were planned on projected to do about 15 million in revenue. And with now, like we went back to the drawing board on that, we think we'll be right around 10. So, I mean, you're talking about a significant, 30 to 40% decrease in top line revenue. Some of our lines are impacted more than others because we have a lot of travel accessories. We have a lot of, a percentage of our business is in the travel space. So I think that that's going to be directly impacted for the next 6 months. Obviously, no one's going to be going anywhere. But it's really frustrating because like I have these discussions and for the last month, like because I saw it firsthand and when I was in China and I barely got out, and then I have family there and I have employees there and, multiple provinces, and I can see all the ways that they handled it there. And I knew that they stopped it faster and better than anyone else in the world can. If it spreads here, it's not going to be stopped because you have too many people that are in denial and you have, an inept government that isn't doing testing, that isn't, out there in the front lines actually stopping any, they haven't done anything, right? You have people that are looking at snapshots of data and saying, they say they like to look at data too, right? But obviously, they're not though. And you and I actually looking at data, you have to look at progressions and you have to look at trends and you have to look at, previous performance of where this already impacted. And you can see the what happened. If you look now, you see what happened in Italy and you see what happened in South Korea. And then, you project that to over here, and that's with them having a stronger response than we had, right? And so the only way that this was stopped in China is because they literally shut the entire country down for 30 days and no one left their house for 30 days. It was, you could leave every second or third day with one person from each household could leave their house every second or third day with a government ID. There was armed guards on every street corner. You could walk to them. They would escort you to the local grocery store. You could get some groceries for your family and go straight back home. And that was the way it was in the entire country for 30 days. And then they said, okay, now we're going to allow some people to start traveling to go back to work. But they started people working remotely if you could, right, during that time. And now they've got it pretty much under control. The number of new cases has been going down rapidly. They have very, very few new cases being diagnosed, but now it's to a point where they can just shut down another area if there's a relapse, but the rest of the country can continue to work because travel is still really restricted. They're going to be the first country that's back up and operating in the world, and we're going to get smashed with this virus. We're going to be worse than they were ever because I think that we're not having that type of response here. And people like to look at it and say, oh, total number of cases, total number of dead, it's the flu is worse. And that's the most frustrating talking point that ever happened because I saw that it's just starting to spread. Like the virus was spread, like the flu doesn't spread as easily as this virus. and the death rate is 30 to 35 times worse than the flu. So if you just look at the progression, the exponential growth of this virus, and you see what's happening in Italy, South Korea, what happened in China, then you'll know that what's happening, what's going to happen here is going to be, you know, catastrophic. And but people are still not taking it seriously because they feel like the death rate for an average person in their 30s that's in decent shape is less than, you know, 0.5% or whatever. But never mind the fact that it's like 20% for anyone that's over 60 that or anyone with medical conditions.
That's what concerns me is I agree that we need to, it's fine for people that are going to recover from it, right? Like that yeah. It's, if you're in good health, this is probably not a concern for you, but spreading it to someone that could not survive it, if we don't pay attention and we don't take the right measures to protect, to prevent spreading to people who could not fight it. We lost over what, I think it was 16,000 deaths from just the flu this year, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, in the flu, we know how to treat and we know, you know, unfortunately some of us like me got the wrong strain of the flu shot. So I got like horribly sick anyway, but bottom line, I could survive that. Now, those people that got the wrong strain of the flu shot, like I did, that couldn't survive it, look at how many deaths we had. So I agree with you where, yeah, some people are overreacting, but then in other cases, I think we're underreacting in preventing the spread because we don't want to be spreading it to people.
Well, it's absolutely devastating. I mean, look what happened in Seattle with that nursing home, right? Like,
yeah.
It gets into one nursing home where everyone's in their 60s or 70s and older and frail. And it was an incredible amount of deaths. Like the percentage there is insanely high. My mom's in her 70s and I worry for her safety right now because everyone's still running around and doing their own thing. And granted, we only have, you know, we're up to like 10 or 20 cases here in Broward County where she lives. And so that's a lot. That means that there's actually hundreds of cases, if not thousands, because like you walk around for 14 days spreading it before you have it. And it doubles, like that actual known number doubles every 5 days. And that's only with tested because we're not testing here in the United States. So if we were actually giving enough tests, the real number should be 80 known cases and probably 1,000, you know, so where is it really? How many people in South Florida really have it? And we won't know until it's really way too late. We're going to have a large percentage of the population that gets sick here in South Florida. And we're only a couple, you know, a week or two away from it ballooning because it is an exponential growth every time. And if you look at resolved cases, a lot of people say, oh, the majority of people that get this are going to live. Yeah, of course they will. Like 97% supposedly right now, if you look at deaths and cases, but deaths is a lag because people have to be sick for a period of time before they die. So if you look at new cases arising and it's exponential growth, new cases outweigh resolved cases. If you look at only deaths to resolved cases, the death rate's like 6%.
Yeah, I think this is a really tough situation. It's not like we haven't been through, you know, different viruses in the past and we haven't kind of been through situations like this. I think, you know, in this case, the spreading is definitely concerning, but what do you think, Brandon, if you were responsible for this nation, what would you implement as a measure in order to prevent, what do you think is the right action for the United States to take?
I think any area that has, I would suspend all travel. I would take any area that has cases and I would lock it down. I would do a mandatory 2 to 3 week vacation, like stay at home. I would do stimulus, massive stimulus plan to make sure people can afford to get food and aren't going to go bankrupt, right? Like I would figure out a way to forgive rent and bills for that month, right? Just literally suspend everything, take care of everything for the month. It would be a really expensive thing, but it would be the only way to stop it. It would be basically what they did in China, and it would be like a state or a region by region thing. Right now we have Northern California, we have Southern California, we have Seattle, we have cases in North Carolina just created, we have New York, we have New Jersey. Like if we had done this originally, as soon as we started to get cases and just said, you know what, but are you going to stop, what is it, 8 million people walking around in New York City? Like, are you going to be able to just say, hey, stop, don't go anywhere, stay in your home? How many are going to listen to you? And then entire buildings, like it spreads in a building because you're sharing the same AC or you're sharing the toilet system. It can become aerosolized. And when you flush the toilet, it goes to your neighbor. Like, this is what happened in China, because the virus isn't just a heavy droplet virus that sits on a door handle or shake someone's hand or whatever, and you spread it that way. It can become aerosolized too. So the virality of it and how quickly it spreads is insane. We're still trying to figure out, like, average person spreads it to what? Like, what the R zero is, right? And we know it's much, much higher than the flu. So
Do you think if we took those measures to lock everything down and prevent all travel, do you think that it would ultimately, that would ultimately solve the problem?
Yeah, of course, because then you start to root it out. You need 2 to 3 weeks just to see who's really sick. If you stay in your house for 2 to 3 weeks and your neighbor gets sick, that means you're not going to get sick, but you probably would have, right? Now, if you're in a small town, like, and you don't really interact with too many people anyway, then your odds of sharing it aren't that good. But if you're in an rural area, in a city, or in an office building, and you're going to infect everyone in that office, you're going to infect everyone in that town, everyone eventually is going to get it, and it's going to spread that much faster. So the more heavily densely populated areas are going to spread it faster. I think that you would need to shut everything down in an area. It would be painful. No one would like it. People wouldn't want to be sitting at home for that. But you have air conditioning and Netflix and food and drinks. And, like, you have a refrigerator and freezer. Like, you're going to survive. And you just take a 2 to 3 week mandatory vacation at home and to see who's really sick and who isn't. And then you can start getting people to the treatment that they need and stop the spread and start cleaning up. And that would probably take a month-long process in any given area. The fact that we haven't done that, though, and we're not going to do that is the problem. I think that you're going to end up with millions and millions of people that get this and tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people dead.
Yeah, Brandon, I think the point that, and this is kind of what I've been thinking about a lot too, is, you know, of course, people, this is all of our opinion, right? Like, none of this is fact. We're not doctors. We're not scientists. I just want to preface that. These are our opinions. But, you know, I would like to think that, you know, all of us here are good at looking data, good at looking at data, and, you know, good at doing it. You know, when you run an Amazon business, I know it doesn't seem like it translates, but we are the kind of people who look at trends, look at statistics, and, you know, look at data a lot. So, you know, that's not making us doctors, but, you know, it's just our opinion. That being said, I think what Brandon alluded to is the reason why it could get a lot worse here and why I think it got really bad in Italy and things like that. Number one, in a Western culture, it's much harder for us to tell people to do things, right? People do not like authority here. They don't like, you know, if the National Guard rolls out in states, which it probably will have to, people are going to be uneasy with that. I know I'm going to be
already done in New York, of today.
I mean, I'm going to be uneasy about that. But that being said, you know, in China, you know, the government there is, you know, of course, it's more hard-handed. So when they say stay home, people stay home. Here, that's going to be a lot harder for the government to enforce. And so just that fact alone, I think, is why, you know, we probably will have it worse here. Now, that being said, all these statistics, all these reporting, it's not, you couldn't even say it's within the margin of error, right? Because we just don't know. It's so early on. But at this point, you know, it might be better for us to err on the side of caution in terms of, you know, working from home, you know, limiting contact with your neighbors, limiting, you know, trying to keep people out of large public gatherings, things like that. That's a good start. You know, people are starting to do that. But right now it's only in the areas that, you know, have gotten the cases. And, you know, that might not be enough. It might be where we have to do it everywhere. And, you know, like Brandon was saying, you know, give it a couple of weeks to see what actually shakes out, because there's so many people out there right now who probably have it, who don't even know that they have it. Now, I'm not too worried about it. You know, between me and my wife and my kids, luckily kids, you know, don't seem to be highly affected by this, but I also have, you know, parents, and my mom has a lung issue. My father-in-law has a lung issue. My dad, you know, is a cancer survivor. Same thing with my mom. Like, they're, you know, they would all be considered pre-existing, and the statistics for them in their 70s is pretty horrid. So, anyway, that's we could talk about this.
Andy, you're spot on with that, right? Like, all we can do is look at what the progression in those other places, what they did to mitigate it or didn't, and then what we're doing as opposed to what they did, and then what the results were, right? Yeah. And so for us, we're really doing nothing. We're not testing enough people. We're not restricting much of anything. We're canceling some festivals. We're canceling some large events. And I think like the response is a little bit too little too late at this point, unless we start taking some serious measures, which it looks like they are going to with activating the National Guard, mandatory cancellation of large events. But, you know, if something goes into effect with a quarantine, you're talking about 2/3 of the economy is hospitality based in the U.S. We're talking about restaurants and retail shops all being shut down for a period of time. A lot of them don't have the savings to sustain that. A lot of people are going to go bankrupt. A lot of people can potentially go homeless. And it's going to be a devastating downturn for our economy. But the alternative is, even if it is only 2%, which I think is on the low end of deaths, right? And the majority of that 2% are geriatrics. You're talking about 100 million people getting sick. You're talking about 2 million deaths. And the majority of those are the older population in our country. And someone said it, well, and not to be cold-hearted, they were like, well, that would be good for the economy because the old people cost us more. And I'm like,
unless it's their dad or grandfather.
Yeah, unless it's their, like my mom, you know, I'm absolutely like devastated. Like it would, what a terrible thought, right? And then, another friend posted that, oh, maybe the thought is that the government's doing nothing because they just want everyone to hurry up and get it so we can try to recover faster.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible that they're that next leveling us, but I think it's just ineptitude. I think it's just, they're just terrible at literally anything. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a tough situation, and you know, I fall on both sides. You know, on one token, you know, it might not be worse than the, or it might be not be as bad as we're hearing on the news. They like to sensationalize everything, but on the other hand, it's like, you know, I'm one of those people who likes to you know, it's better to go on the cautionary side of things rather than, you know, be too little too late. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. I'm terrified to have my kids home, you know, my three children home where they're in the house for 3 weeks, especially since we don't watch, we don't let them watch TV or Netflix or things like that. So for us, that's going to be, it's going to be difficult, but luckily we have an acre so we can go let them play out in the yard. But yeah, that's going to be hard. And you know, like you said, economy wise, I mean, people, it's going to be rough. It's going to be rough. I don't think nobody knows, you know, the ripple effect that's going to happen from this already. And it sucks because a lot to do with the economy is perception, right? And if you hear every day about the stock market collapsing and this virus, like people are in panic mode right now. And absolutely not trying to do that to you guys. We're 100%. Honestly, it's just, you know, a conversation here because to me, you know, I've had these, you know, these thoughts and things like that. And I'm just really interested in hearing others' opinions on it. So I think,
yeah, that, because we don't want people panicking. We want people being diligent. Right. And
proactive. Yep.
And so there's a fine line between the two. We're not saying hurry up and go hoard toilet paper. And I think that's really stupid. I don't know why
that's what happening. Showers are for, people.
Yeah.
get a bidet. My dad and I were talking about that yesterday. And we're like, get teepee, like forget the teepee, grab some canned food. You can shower your butt off in the, you can.
Yeah. If it comes down to it and you run out of toilet paper, you're not going to die. But if you run out of food, exactly, you're probably going to be in a rough
exactly.
spot.
Right? Go for the food and water, people.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that there's a fine line between that panic and between being diligent, but we need people to be diligent. And I think that people aren't yet. I think people are starting to listen, pay attention. And if you're in an area that's being, things, schools are being shut down, like it's happening in counties all over the country where schools are being shut down. I know you're not looking forward to it, but it's probably the best bet because kids are little petri dishes and they love to just spread things. They're the carriers of this. It doesn't impact them for whatever reason, but they're happy to go share it with everybody.
Yeah. Big all right, hug. Let's get back to Amazon.
Coronavirus hugs. Yeah. So I would love to hear, you know, we've kind of talked a lot about, there's been so many big changes with Amazon, right? There's so, this year, and I mean, I would say the end of 2019, we had so many major changes. And, you know, Brandon, you said you still think that Amazon is one of the best investments. So I would love to hear your take on what do you think the future is on Amazon? Obviously, things are getting very crowded with commodity type products, things that are very easy for Chinese manufacturers to come in and compete. that kind of thing. There's Amazon going direct to manufacturers saying, hey, list your products here. What do you think is the future of Amazon as far as the landscape is concerned? And what is your advice to new people looking to get into Amazon and how that they can compete in that landscape?
Yeah, I think that the time of throwing darts and using like just looking at sales of the first page of a random keyword and looking at reviews and choosing a product, I think that time's over. So that's why I like a lot of those courses out there that teach that methodology for product selection. You know, just to name Kevin David, ASM, KT9, like all those guys. The success rate of those students is under 10% for that reason, because they're not looking at enough data. And I think that what Andy, you know, is constantly talking about and what we talk about is if you're going to succeed in this business, then you need to be able to understand how to find the keywords that your competitors are getting their sales from and understand the competitive nature. It's supply and demand. If the demand are all the ways people are searching for something, the supply is how your competitors are meeting that demand. And if they're not doing a good job at it, then you can come in and do it better. And then that's where your opportunity comes in. And the better they're doing at it, then the higher risk you have of doing that product. So you could assign that opportunity and risk score that we like to assign the product. And I think that that's where the opportunity is for people to come into this business today, is if you learn how to do it correctly from the beginning with data, and then you learn how the algorithm is currently working, and then you can adapt to any changes that come out in the future, you're going to be way ahead of the majority of sellers. This isn't, first of all, most people that start a business fail, and that's across every single industry. And the reason is because most people are just bad entrepreneurs, and they don't put their head down and focus, and they give up too easily, and all of those other reasons that entrepreneurs fail. There's no difference here in the Amazon. I think a lot of people come into this industry and they expect it to be done for them. They listen to the hype from these con artists saying it's a side hustle gig that you can make millions of dollars working a few hours a week. This is a real business that you're starting. So set up by having the right expectations to look at the data correctly, and then to understand how Amazon's algorithm really works, I think that your success rate is way above 50% in this business. Like for us, launching is like 80% of products that we launch are successful. My student success rate is somewhere around 70%. So I think that if you just have the budget, the capital, and the time to put into it, and you come in with the right mindset, the right work ethic, then I think that, you know, over the course of a few products, you're going to be successful.
Yeah, I think all of us have had those first products that they're either, you, even when you use the data, as you mentioned, Brandon, 20% of your products are not successful. That's okay. That happens. Yeah. We move on. You know, there's no way to know who else might be launching something similar at the same time. There's no way to know that the market's suddenly going to turn and do something else. We can do our best with data. What would you say, based on your students, for the biggest reasons for failure on your student side of things? And what would you, because I'm sure that so many of our listeners right now have had some of those same experiences. And then on that same token, what would you say are some of the ways that can be overcome?
Yeah, so I mean, the common mistakes that I see are just not ordering enough products, right? Like, so running out of inventory, the wrong product selection, like choosing products. So I have students that come in all the time that started maybe with one of those other courses. They chose a few products that are struggling. Not understanding truly how to do PPC, not understanding indexing. And then the most common thing for us is maybe just choosing the wrong style of product, or like we try to make it different and it just doesn't resonate. Like our conversion rate's just lower, right? Like people wanted the striped one.
They wanted the striped one and not the polka dot one.
Yeah. So that's, we learned that lesson last year when we just don't let my wife choose the design. And, you know, so her style choices just don't resonate with Americans because she's Chinese, I guess. So she finally admitted it. It was hard for her, but I guess we just base it on data. We understand that like certain colors are going to do better. They have higher click-through rates, conversion rates. And then there's ways to get data and look at your competition and really understand like which ones are really doing better than others. So all of those things just factor in. I think the most common thing for my students and for what I see other people failing, again, are like they try these methods where they just buy 100 units just to test it. And it's like, what does that do? You ruin your honeymoon period. You run out of stock before you could effectively actually gain any consistent rank. Now you're building up bad sales history when you're out of stock. So your ranks are going to be much harder to regain. Like, they don't understand how Amazon works with regards to ranking and averages and being consistent and what metrics Amazon's looking at to decide where your product belongs. And they don't even know how to do the product research to begin with. They're just choosing Me Too products that don't have a lot of opportunity, that are high risk.
I think a lot of people don't realize that it's a long game. It's not, it's not a get rich quick thing. It's a long game, and you do have to play the game. It's like starting any business, whether you're going into retail, whether you're doing e-commerce, whether you're going to become a plumber, you have to be better than your competitors to survive. And you have to know that business, and you have to know your customer. And the better that you do with that, the more likely you are to survive. But you also have to realize, like you said, you know, you have to be in it for the long game. What's going to happen after this order? What's going to happen after this order? And then the other thing that I thought you said that was interesting to me was, you know, people are learning still from these old methods that don't work anymore. And how much untraining do you have to do? Andy and I run into that all the time. It's like we're having to kind of retrain, and it's really hard to get people to just let go of that, right? Because they really think, you know, sometimes people just want to follow a formula. It's easier sometimes to follow a formula. And so it's sometimes hard to let go of that.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, so for us, it's the optimization side would be another reason that you see failure, because they don't know how to do that initial keyword research to understand, okay. So the top line of that is like when someone searches for a keyword, for a certain product through one specific keyword, that it doesn't just impact that one keyword, and people don't understand that part of it. Like, that's like the fundamental foundation that you need to understand, which is, I searched for, Starbucks cold brew coffee, right? Now I'm going to impact many keywords in two different places. I'm going to impact from that keyword other ranks for this product when I add it to cart, not just buy it, but when I add it to cart and buy it. And then I'm going to impact any keywords that have a broad affiliation, a phrase affiliation, or the exact, and at different percentages. Then I'm also going to impact on the way that I built my listing, a bunch of keywords in the order that I built them as well. And so once you understand how every keyword impacts every other keyword when it's converted, sold, added to cart, then you understand how to truly optimize your listing and how to truly start pulling the right levers for the ranking. And I think that most people don't have that basic understanding of how keywords work for and how the algorithm impacts, you know, one keyword impacts all the others at what percentages. I think that's like that high level knowledge that people need to get to, I think.
Yeah, I think just having that really great, it's okay to hire things out, but having that really great foundational knowledge is so important because it affects everything else that you do. You know, so understanding the different match types and why they matter and how they matter and how the algorithm works and how the work that you put in impacts, you know, how it impacts your sales and impacts your progression is really important. I love that you're pointing that out and that you're helping people focus on those fundamentals. I got to duck out early, Brandon. I really enjoyed having you on the show. We really enjoyed having you on the show. I'm going to let Andy continue to grill you.
Andy, great to see you.
Yeah, definitely great to see you too. And hopefully we can catch up sometime when we don't have coronavirus events getting canceled. We'll talk to you guys soon.
I'm sure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah. So Brandon, I love all that. Yeah. I always say that, like, you need to look at your Amazon business and especially your Amazon listing, right? Like the foundation of your home, right? If you build a crappy listing, that's like building your house on a crappy foundation, right? I mean, everything,
100%.
Your PPC, how your PPC works, is completely tied to how good your listing is. Your organic, your conversion. I mean, it's so funny because people spend 2 months researching a product using Jungle Scout, and then they'll spend like 30 minutes writing the listing. They just are lazy as heck. They throw the thing up in 30 minutes and then they wonder why they haven't sold anything, right? I mean, to me, that's the biggest frustration. And people, just really, if you're studying anything right now, if you have a product and it's not working, drop everything and just go and learn about how to optimize a listing and watch Brandon's video, watch my video, get different opinions and perspectives and test it, because guess what? Brandon doesn't know everything. I don't know everything. We've just know what we've done so far in our experience, and it's worked for us and it's worked for people we know, but that, you know, we might be in a different niche than you. And the people who are in your niche are, you know, into organics, and the way that we write a listing, we don't show the passion of like the organic part of that, you know, like, it, you know, all these listings have secret sauce as well. So the thing you can do is really get to know, you know, how to build that listing yourself, because if you try to farm it out, nobody's ever going to have that depth of knowledge that you do on your market, especially if it's something you're passionate about.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it, that's the real art behind it, is taking the science, like the data science that we do, and then making it and resonating with the audience that's buying. Like, you still have to write it into something good. It's not like your bullets are just a list of keywords. It's resonating that message that's going to help convert and creating a better listing. Yeah. And that's the bottom line that I see with a lot of people, is like, they might have a really nice main image. And there's a lot you can do to optimize your main images and your images that I see like a lot of people come with, but then their listing is just missing so many keywords. And so what ends up happening is relevancy is such an important factor for Amazon to determine where you belong and how your PPC performs. So to determine, like, you get a quality score for your listing per keyword, you get a PPC at a PPC level, you get a quality score at a campaign level, at an ad group level, and at a keyword level. So you have all these quality scores. And then the quality score, the factors are click-through rate, conversion rate, and relevancy, right? Like, so we know that those are the factors that make up a quality score. And relevancy is like one of the biggest pieces of that. And if you confuse Amazon because you didn't write your listing well, or because you're just missing important keywords that you didn't know how to find in the first place, then you're going to end up in a situation where you're never going to be able to rank effectively for a lot of really relevant keywords, and your PPC is going to underperform.
Yeah, Brendan, that's a great point. I know that, you know, within the last, you know, probably 2 or 3 years ago is when Amazon kind of made a shift to a relevancy algorithm. Before that, it was how many keywords you could stuff in the listing, right?
Yeah.
And that's when it was like, you know, the phrase matching didn't really matter. It was just like you would stuff every keyword you could. Those days are gone. Unfortunately, so many people, because that way of optimizing listings was taught for so many years, there's so many people who are still doing that. And I still have to like crowbar it into their mind that like, no, you need to start putting important phrases, not just keywords, into your listing.
Exactly. And exact matters.
and not go too wide, right? If you try to like put, you know, if you're doing, you know, this Chromecast, right? But if you put it here, like, you know, project your office screen and, you know, project your phone, you know, all these other things, rather than, hey, this is a media device to watch movies and TV, right? Like, go with what, you know, maybe the top 2 or 3 themes of what that product is for, and really concentrate and go deep on that. Because if you try to go too wide, that's when Amazon goes, well, wait a minute, what is this? You know, what is this thing? Like,
oh, he's selling an office projector. Okay.
Right, exactly. And I think so many people miss that point. You know, in this day and age, when it comes to Amazon, you know, that's the most important factor. So, when you guys are doing those listings, make sure that you're thinking about that along the way. All right, Brendan. Absolutely. Well, we went past an hour. We did it. Is there anything else you want to cover? And on that note, the few things that I love to ask, which is kind of off the cuff, but you know, I love to hear what people are you know, listening to and reading and things like that, because I get good ideas from it, right? Like, my latest one is The One Thing, right? Because I have that entrepreneurial brain that's so scattered. That book is really
I really enjoyed that. I actually saw him speak at Capitalism conference, and while he was speaking, remind me the author's name.
I can't remember. What's my book?
Yeah. So while he was speaking, I'm sitting there and I'm like thinking to myself, I need to fire. Like, I'm such a terrible manager, right? I knew I was a bad manager, but while he's sitting there speaking, I thought to myself, I'm so much worse than I thought I was, right? And so my wife always tells me, helps me point out my weaknesses, and I really appreciate that about her, because, you know, it's not done in a malicious way. It's done in a check yourself way, because you have room to improve, and it helps me improve. But I was sitting there, and I just couldn't believe the impact that his story and what he teaches in The One Thing. So I did end up buying that book, and I thought it was absolutely helped me stay focused throughout the day. And I find myself, I need to go back to that occasionally. And I think I need to go back to it now, because yesterday I was so unproductive because I had 20 things I wanted to get done and then none of them got done. Like only two of them got done.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. I'm a pretty quick reader. So I started yesterday. I'm more than halfway through. I only read like, you know, an hour or whatever, but already so far I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to, like you said, go back to this book, reread it multiple times, just because I know that, if I start doing those things, you know, that it's going to make a big impact. And so if you guys haven't read that yet, definitely. But, like I tell everybody, the first book to start with, if you haven't yet, is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That should be like your kindergarten reading before you graduate to first grade in terms of reading. That should be, you know, the first book out the door. Or Richest Man in Babylon's another one. Any other kind of books or podcasts, you know, people, things you follow that you felt have made a really big impact on your entrepreneurial journey?
So I subscribe to Blinkist, and I know that it's not always the most detailed version of a book, and it's just they really condense the message. And if it's something really good, I'll try to get the actual full book. But I followed, if you guys don't know what Blinkist is, it's an app, and it's just basically someone summarizing the Cliff's Notes.
Yeah, it's Cliff Notes of business. And well, they have all kinds of books. It's not just.
Yeah, they have everything now.
It's great. Like if you're standing in line somewhere or something, that's when I always like to whip that out.
Anytime I'm driving or whatever, yeah, I just love to just turn it on, and it's great because usually if I'm commuting from where I am in Miami to Broward, where my other office is, then or where my mom is, then I'll be able to get through almost an entire book because it's like 20 minutes per book. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So Scaling Up was really good. I'm just looking through and I'm going to see Traction from Gino Wickman was good, and The Life-Changing Magic of Not Giving a Fuck.
I read the short version of that too. And yeah, I like that too. Lots of great suggestions there. Fantastic. All right, Brandon. So tell people where they can find you. Let them know what you're up to in terms of, you know, your course, your coaching, you know, anything you want to plug here. Now is the time.
No, I appreciate that. Well, I've got a free course on Amazon. It's four sections. It covers everything from product discovery, optimization that we spoke about, sourcing, and then launches. And then I've got a masterclass specifically on just product research, how we do our data analysis. It's 5 hours long. That's normally $200 for anyone listening. Just use the promo code BY50 off and it'll save you $100. So for under $100, you get 5 hours. And then I've got an Inner Circle mastermind, which is more of a college level course. I'm live every week. Ask me anything. I do live classes every 2 to 3 weeks. I'm always updating the content. We have about 500 students in there, and it's a great community. It's just like, you know, over 75 of us are doing over 7 figures. We help each other out, and yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what I got. And I can set up a discount code for you, Andy, for your listeners, if you'd like.
Yeah, sure. We can put that in the show notes when we publish. So great. Thank you so much, Brandon.
So the website, just to check it out, yep. It's seller-systems.com.
Perfect. All right, guys, go there and check it out and, you know, give Brandon a shout.
Appreciate it.
You can also find him on all the social channels and bug him there. You know, he'll be slinging his coronavirus data on there. You can check that out. And
I hope I'm wrong, man. I hope this thing, the weather gets warm and it disappears. So do I,
believe me. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. But you know, nothing wrong with being prepared. You know, so I definitely agree with that. Hey guys, if you haven't yet rated, reviewed, and subscribed to the podcast, we really, really appreciate you guys doing that. We mentioned our latest review was a 2-star, and we don't mind getting 4 reviews, because we like getting feedback. The review we don't agree with in terms of, they said we're giving bad advice in terms of service. But that being said, I appreciate that feedback because I want to know what you guys are thinking. In terms of service, that's a rough one. You know, I mean, that's ever changing. That's a living document. People have different opinions on that. But you know, we give you guys the information. And when we do talk about something that we think might be iffy on the TOS, we always kind of mention that. So just keep that in mind for everybody who's listening. But once again, we really, really appreciate you guys, you know, getting the word out. The podcast has been growing month over month by thousands of listeners. So we really, really appreciate that, guys. Thank you so much. And thank you so much again to Brandon for being here and giving all that great knowledge that he gives. And we'll see you guys next time. Thank you so much for joining us on Seller Roundtable.
Thanks for tuning in. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for live Q&A and bonus content after the recording at sellerroundtable.com. Sponsored by the ultimate software tool for Amazon sales and growth, SellerSEO.com and AmazingAtHome.com.